This class, I think most of you already know what we're supposed to be studying. Be studying the United Kingdom, talking about the United Kingdom of Israel. We have a more modern term, United Kingdom, but it has reference to another place, another government, another empire. It was an empire at one time, but we're not talking about that one. Talking about the United Kingdom that consisted of Saul, David, and Solomon. And these, of course, people that were selected by God to rule His people after they had come out of the land of Egypt and had conquered the land and the period of the judges. I just studied about, I don't know how many of you were in this class last time. Some of you are in here because you'll be teaching next quarter. And so hopefully you'll pick up something during this time that'll be helpful to you. I imagine most of you are fairly well acquainted with the material because otherwise you wouldn't have been selected to teach next quarter. So we won't be able to tell you a great deal, but here and there, as we sit in a class and we listen to other people talk and discussion takes place, and we pick up pointers that we perhaps hadn't thought about. And I always, every time I read through the Bible, I read something that I hadn't thought of, and I'll comment to Barbara or somebody, I hadn't noticed that before. So that's the benefit of going over this material over and over, regardless of whether we're among the young people or those of us like Jimmy and me and Charles have got a few years behind us. We still run across things that we haven't noticed before. There's always something to learn. Those of you who've been in this class or others during this time when we're studying the 17 periods have gone through several periods already. Those periods begin with what? What's the first of the 17 periods? Okay, before the flood, sometimes called creation stories, or some words to that effect. Anyway, the period before the flood. And then, of course, the next one would be the flood. And then what would be the next one? Gathering of the people. People had come forth out of the ark, and they began to multiply as they were commanded. Fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth. They kind of stayed in one place. But anyway, after the scattering of the people, we have some people listed as by what term? What do we call them? All right. After the patriarchs, we have the Exodus, coming forth out of the captivity, where they were sent for the purpose of becoming a great nation. And they came out, the Exodus, going into the wilderness. And after the Exodus, after they came out, then what period took place? Well, there was also another period that took place after the actual coming out of the land. They came forth, and then they wandering in the wilderness. Okay, the wandering in the wilderness, then the conquering of the land. They went over into the land of Canaan, and then one period before, or actually where we begin today with the United Kingdom, we're still in what period? Okay, the period of the judges. So the period of the judges goes through at least through the 8th chapter of the book of 1 Samuel. That's where we are today. If you'll notice in our schedule, what we're supposed to do today is review and introduce the period of the United Kingdom. And that's pretty much what the 8th chapter of the book of 1 Samuel is all about. The introduction to the period known as the United Kingdom. How it all came about. So we've done some reviewing already. We'll talk some more about the things that have taken place in the past as by way of review and by way of showing the attitude of the people and what caused them to the United Kingdom to come about in the first place. Period of the United Kingdom goes from, as we say in our schedule here, 1 Samuel chapter 8. Does anybody know how far it goes through the United Kingdom? what would be the last chapter of that particular area of the Bible that would be talking about the United Kingdom. 1 Samuel chapter 8 through 1 Kings chapter 11. And 1 Kings chapter 11 corresponds with 2 Chronicles chapter 9. In the books of Chronicles, we go from 1 Chronicles chapter 10 to 2 Chronicles chapter 9. And I find it interesting as we notice those two accounts of the United Kingdom that they both end with the same statement, or pretty much the exact same words. Then Solomon rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David, his father, and Rehoboam, his son, reigned in his place. That's 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 43. That's the last of this particular area where we're talking about the United Kingdom, 1 Samuel 8 through 1 Kings chapter 11, ends with, "And Rehoboam reigned in his stead." And that's the way the same words are used in the book of 2 Chronicles. In the last verse of chapter 9 of 2 Chronicles, it ends with, "Solomon rested with his fathers, Rehoboam his son reigned in his place." So, this is what we'll be studying. And the schedule that I've handed out is supposed to be pretty nearly accurate. I hope it is anyway. I've gone through the calendar a couple of times and have ruled out the nights that we'll be having singing and the meeting that comes up next week. Took out the Wednesday night of both of those occasions, and so if you were to go off on a business trip and be gone 2 or 3 weeks, as some of you might possibly do, I want to welcome one of them back from a business trip. We're glad to have him back. But you'll be able to take your schedule and say, "Well, I'm back on this particular day, so this is what I'll need to study." So you won't have to worry about where am I in the class, the series, hopefully. As was pointed out before our class began, it's going to be hard to stay on the schedule, but that's the tentative schedule for our class periods, and we're going to try to stay on it as best we can. We'll also be including the wisdom literature to some degree, books of, of course, we'll be talking about Job or Song of Solomon, I don't think, particularly, but the wisdom literature was written during this period, for the most part. Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, the Song of Solomon, and particularly the book of Psalms will be included in some of the things that are studied during this quarter, because David, who's one of the kings, perhaps the best of all of them, well, without doubt the best of them, wrote a lot of these Psalms, and they talk about things that took place during this period. One thing is constant. One thing is pretty much the case as we're talking about a review of Jewish history from the very beginning. And, of course, the book of Judges bears this out and emphasizes this perhaps more than any other, is that one of the defining characteristics of God's people, it sounds strange to say this about God's people, but rejection and disobedience seemed to be the main characteristic in their life, or at least a flaw that they had. During the time from the very beginning, Adam and Eve, you know the story of that. Whether it was an apple or whatever, or a kumquat, or a avocado, or whatever, it was something that they wanted. And one of the reasons they wanted it was what? So what? You can't have it. You can't have it. So often, something may be beautiful, attractive, appealing, but that's not the main thing. It's something that we can't have, and that makes us want it all the more. It's just a human characteristic that we have to work on. And so it was with Adam and Eve. And of course, Cain rejected God's instruction. He offered what he wanted to offer, and didn't make any difference what God wanted. So his life didn't end very well. didn't proceed very well. The whole earth during the time of Noah was wicked. Every thought, we could preach a sermon on that one verse. Every thought of their heart was only evil, continually. Just piled one on top of the other. The adjectives that are used. They just, if that's the correct way of putting it grammatically. They only thought things that were evil. So these people on the face of the earth were people who rejected God. But Noah was the notable exception. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Meaning that he was not a perfect man, but he thought to do God's will. He followed God's instructions, and so he found grace. He found that unmerited favor. There was also that period that we talked about a while ago, the scattering of the people. They were told to be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth, scatter out over the face of the earth. They chose not to do it. They were full of pride. They wanted to make a name for themselves. You ever heard anybody like that? Wanted to make a name for themselves. And so they had this fanciful idea. They didn't know a whole lot about space and things of that kind. They didn't know a whole lot about what goes on up there or how far it is up there and things like that. So they wanted to build a tower that would reach to heaven so that they would not be scattered abroad on the face of the earth. The exact opposite of what God had instructed them to do. They wanted to stay right here. God said, scatter out. God had to take some extraordinary means to scatter them. In the wilderness, as the people went out into the wilderness and they were told to go into the land, they said, we can't take it because the people are too strong for us. And they murmured, they began murmuring immediately after they left the land of Egypt. And they refused to go into the land because they were afraid, because they didn't trust in God. There were various forms of sedition. Sedition of Miriam and Aaron as they rejected the authority that God had placed in Moses. There was Nadab and Abihu as they offered strange fire and would not follow God's instruction. Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, and others that followed them, rejected the authority that God had placed in Moses. And so they wanted some glory and some prestige and some power of their own. And so the earth swallowed up these people who were involved in this sedition. So it is today with people who want to reject God. They're going to reap the punishment that goes with that type of attitude. Rejection, the disobedience were characteristic of the people of God throughout history. But Joshua gave the people a choice. You choose ye this day whom you will serve. Whether the gods on the other side of the river that your ancestors served, worship. Gods down in Egypt, the gods of the Canaanites, whose land you dwell, the Amorites, in whose land you dwell. And he said, and I heard a man say one time, or as he was quoting that the passage that there where Joshua gave them that, put that proposition out to them, he said something that just kind of struck me as not exactly the way it was. He said, he was quoting God, he said, or Joshua said, if you want to serve the gods of on the other side of the river, the gods of the Amorites, the gods of the Egyptians, whatever, fine, he said. I don't think he meant that. I don't think he meant that's okay, that's an option. You can do that if you want to, and it'll be okay. I don't think he meant that, but it sure did sound like it. Fine. It was not fine. It was in total disobedience and rejection of God. And so he was not saying, here's your choice, and whichever one you choose is going to be all right. It'll be fine. As for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord. And that was the only option, really. And so this is the way that it was that it was throughout the history of God's people. Well, a suggestion to make regarding a lot of the names of people and places that there will be running across in this quarter. If you want to make a list It might help you in learning these names and their connection to the story. Just make a list, and then each time you run across that name, just write the reference that is made to that particular name under it, and have them in columns or however you want to do it, up and down the page, across the page. Just a suggestion as a way to become better acquainted with the names. Names give people a lot of problems a lot of times, and so that might be helpful to you. One thing about the prophecies of God, and this is sort of the introduction to the thoughts that we'll be talking about today from 1 Samuel chapter 8. Go back to Deuteronomy chapter 17, and beginning with verse 14 through 17, I think it is. As Moses was giving a speech to the people, as they were about to go into the land, he was telling them things that were going to come to pass, and warning them about their conduct and how they were to live in order to please God, and telling them things that would eventually be the case, though they were not necessarily, in many cases, not what God would have them do. Deuteronomy chapter 17, beginning verse 14, "When you come to the land which the Lord your God is giving you, and possess it, and dwell in it, and say, I will set a king over me like all the nations that are around me. You shall surely set a king over you whom the Lord your God chooses, one from among your brethren. You shall set as king over you. You may not set a foreigner over you who is not your brother. But he shall not multiply horses for himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt to multiply horses. For the Lord has said to you, you shall not return that way again. Neither shall he multiply wives for himself, lest his heart turn away. Nor shall he greatly multiply silver and gold for himself." That sounds like a prescription for disaster. As it turns out, it was true. You read the 10th chapter. I believe there's a reference in your Bible. The 10th chapter of the book of 1 Kings, verses 26 through 29. I will not take time to read that, but if you want to mark that as being one to study, it shows that Solomon, last of the kings of the United Kingdom, as the kingdom seemed to have gotten better during the time of David, and then Solomon takes over, and it looks like it's just going to be a utopia. It's going to be the greatest kingdom that ever existed. Again, on a high note, with his desire for wisdom, so that he could rule his people, God's people, in a way that would be best for them and honor and glory to God. He ended up on a very sour note. The one reason was because he disobeyed the commands regarding the multiplying of horses. You read that account there in 1 Kings chapter 10. You'll see that he did indeed go down to Egypt and other places and multiply horses to himself. And gold was abundant. He had ships going in various directions to bring back gold. And he received gold just from it was just pouring in. And silver was like rocks in the street. But he multiplied wives. You know how many wives he had. And his wives were not people that would be a benefit to him. They were people of just whoever looked good to him or had a good personality. But they didn't have to be the kind of person that God would approve of. In fact, is they, for the most part, were not. And so disobeying this command of God, given through Moses back in Deuteronomy, the kingdom began to decline. And thus, eventually, the United Kingdom ceased to exist. But we come to One thing I'll mention regarding prophecies, this one came true before we go into 1 Samuel chapter 8. There were prophets back in the Old Testament. If we just read what they said without reading the context, we'd think that they were pretty good guys, that they spoke the truth. There was a prophet by the name of Zedekiah, spoken of in 1 Kings chapter 22, verse 11. Ahab was wanting to go over and fight against some people that had taken some land, or he said they'd taken some land from him, and he was wanting Jehoshaphat to go with him. Jehoshaphat was a good king. He was a righteous king, but he kind of tended to not be too careful about his friends, about people his alliances, his people he associated with. So he did had a lot of dealings with Ahab, which was not to his benefit, and didn't serve the purpose of righteousness and goodness to a great extent. Ahab asked him, "Will you go and fight and help me get this land back?" And Jehoshaphat wanted to get some prophets or a prophet of God and find out, is this the thing to do? Well, Ahab had his prophets, his yes men, and he got them, and they began telling him, "Yeah, go ahead, everything will be all right. You'll be successful." Jehoshaphat wondered, "Well, is there another? Is there a prophet of God?" Looks like that would have been a key right there. Is there a prophet of God? He seemed to recognize that this multitude of prophets were not prophets of God. Anyway, yes, there's one prophet, Micaiah, but I don't like him. He doesn't prophesy good concerning me. I wonder why he didn't. He had good reason not to. Well, he got Micaiah, and he came out and began to say just like the other prophets, because that's what Ahab wanted to hear. And he wasn't saying it because he wanted to please Ahab, but he was pulling him pretty much into a trap, I guess. Anyway, after he told him what he wanted to hear, then he said, "How many times do I have to tell you to tell me the truth?" And so he began to tell him what was actually true. You know the story of how Ahab went into battle. He was killed. That was it. He disobeyed God. He listened to the wrong people. Zedekiah was one of those prophets, and you know, he went to this elaborate scene where he took these horns of iron and he put them up like this and went around, you know, like he was some bull in a pasture butting this animal or this person or whatever and driving them away, and he was powerful. And with these horns, we're going to push the king of Babylon let me get that straight. He's going to impose his will anyway on the enemy. He was going to accomplish his purpose. Had this there's another prophet I was going to talk about, and don't need to really get into that, because Hananiah was another prophet like that in the book of Jeremiah chapter 28. He told the people what they wanted to hear. Hananiah told the people that in 2 years you're going to be brought back from Babylonian captivity. It always struck me. I remember the first time I read it in Jeremiah chapter 28. The last verse of that chapter says, that same year, Hananiah the prophet died. Prophecy died with him because it was not true. But as far as the prophecies of God, they are true. They come true. The statement is made concerning prophecies. If they come true, then it is evident that they were a true prophecy. Stands to reason, doesn't it? Self-evident, isn't it? And so when a prophecy proves to be false, then it's because it's spoken by a false prophet. When it is true, it's spoken by a true prophet. And so it is with the prophecies concerning the desire of the people for a king. Well, we come to 1 Samuel chapter 8. It came to pass when Samuel was old that he made his sons judges over Israel. The name of the firstborn was Joel, and the name of the second, Abijah. They were judges in Beersheba. Samuel was old. You know that he had been a judge for quite some time. The previous chapter in verse 15 says, "And Samuel judged Israel all the days of his life." He even judged Israel apparently after they got their wish and got a king, didn't he? He was an influence. He dealt with. He rebuked Saul. He anointed David later on. He stayed around for some time, and even after his death, Saul sought his wisdom, his counsel. and got it because God allowed him to see him after he had risen from the dead, or after he had died and was brought back ostensibly by the witch of Endor. But Samuel got old. He made his sons judges. Now these were not really part of the judges. You probably memorized the judges, but you never did name Joel and Abijah as being judges, did you? The reason for that is in Acts chapter 13, verse 20, as Barnabas and Saul were going out, and Paul later became Paul, of course, as they were teaching the people and giving them a review of Jewish history, they talked about the fact that God gave them judges until for 450 years until Samuel the prophet. So you don't have these two men listed as being judges. He just kind of delegated some authority to them. And they were down in Beersheba. We don't have a map up here yet. I was going to try to find one, but I haven't got it. But you know, I think most of you know where Beersheba is. It's down in the southern part over kind of toward the Mediterranean Sea, or in that area, the southern part of the land of Canaan, land of Israel. And Samuel was up there in Ramah, about middle ways of the country. And he made a circuit from going from Ramah to Bethel and He was from year to year on a circuit to Bethel, Gilgal, and Mizpah, and judged Israel in all these places. He was gone quite a bit, wasn't he? So that's where Samuel was located. He always came back to Ramah, up about middle ways of the country, and had his sons as judges down in Beersheba. What kind of judges were they? Good ones? Okay. Apparently, Samuel had spent too much time away from home, didn't really know what kind of sons he had, or maybe the sons were down in Beersheba carrying on their type of activity, and Samuel didn't know what had taken place with them. Maybe they were pretty good hypocrites and talked one way around him and a different way to other people. I don't know how this came about, but Samuel, for some reason or other, was unaware of the true situation with his sons. He made them judges in Beersheba. But his sons did not walk in his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain, took bribes, perverted justice. You want a judge like that? You want somebody dispensing justice to you that would have these characteristics? Not good ones at all. So much like the sons of Eli. Of course, their problem was not these things that pertained to dishonesty. They were involved in immorality for the most part. But these sons of Samuel were people that liked filthy lucre, and they as judges, they didn't have a blindfold on their face and holding the scales out in front of them, and whichever way the scales tilted, that's the way things were. They wanted to tweak the scales, maybe, in favor of people who would give them money or some kind of favors. Then the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. They came to his place, his home base. These elders, these older men of the people of Israel, came from all over the whole country. They convened there at Ramah and said to him, "Look, you're old. Your sons do not walk in your ways." Now, that's true. He was old. He didn't need to be told that. He was still doing his job, though. And whether or not he knew his sons were not what they ought to be, I don't know. Apparently he didn't. Apparently they had pulled the wool over his eyes. But the people of the land knew about it. But then they come to the real issue. "Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations." They wanted a king to judge them. They didn't want a judge. Now back in Judges chapter 2, about verse 16, God made judges. God put judges over them. That was God's plan. When the people sinned and they cried out to him, you studied this last quarter, I guess, those of you who are in this class, God brought a judge forth and put him over the people, and he would be a man whom God could use for that purpose. He'd be a man who, with the ability, and with God's help, he was able to deliver them from their enemies. So that was the plan that God had. Now the people are wanting to do things differently. And they kind of let the cat out of the cellophane bag here. They said, judge us like all the nations. We want to be like the people around us. That's when you get into trouble. They didn't need to be like them. They were not like the people around them, were they? They were to be a separate people. They were to be a distinct people. They were to be a holy people, set apart from the rest of the world. They were to be God's people, a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. But these people, these elders, who should have known better by the time they got to be older people, wanted to be like the nations around them. This thing displeased Samuel. He knew that prophecy back there that we read a while ago from Deuteronomy chapter 17. He knew that prophecy. They should have. They should have known that this is something that's not good. But God knew that they were going to ask for a king. And so he spoke by the words of Moses that this was going to take place. Displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. So what did Samuel do? Throw a fit? Cry? Sulk? He prayed to God. Right. It's what God's people do. David was oftentimes praying to God, asking for guidance, wisdom. Remember Nehemiah. You read the book of Nehemiah and see the number of times that he prayed to God. Sometimes his prayers were just a sentence, but he still prayed to God. He recognized his need for God's help. The Lord said to Samuel, heed the voice of the people in all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. Not you, Samuel. They're not objecting you. They're not wanting to get rid of you because of who you are. They're rejecting me. I was the one who instituted the system whereby the people were ruled over, or however you want to put it, by judges. That was the way I wanted it, and they wanted to do it different, and so they're rejecting me. Pretty much like in Acts chapter 7, where Stephen was giving a history of the Jewish people. He was not doing like sometimes when they would give a history of the Jewish people to show the scheme of redemption and coming down to the coming of Christ and the fulfillment of the prophecies about Christ and things like that. Stephen was showing that throughout Jewish history, people have rejected the authority of God. He said, and he called the people stiff-necked, uncircumcised in heart and ears. The way Stephen described it. So that's certainly true here. According to all the works which they have done since the days I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, which they have forsaken me and served other gods, so they are doing to you also. You're just an innocent victim of this. You just happen to be the man who is the judge, and whoever was in charge of the people would be rejected by them because they want a king. That's just all they want, and they're not concerned about doing the will of God. God could have said, uh-uh, not going to happen. I'm not going to give you a king. And the people would have had nothing else to say about it. He could have used some extraordinary means. He could have sent fiery serpents among them, couldn't he? He could have caused them to be some kind of plague to come upon them. But he chose to give them what they wanted so they could learn that their way was not best, that God's way is best. Sometimes you just have to give them what they want and let them suffer the consequences. So that's what God did on this particular occasion. Now therefore, heed their voice. However, you shall solemnly warn them, show them the behavior of the king who will reign over them. Show them what he's going to be like. Let them know what they're getting into. Don't let them go into it with their eyes closed. Tell them the whole story. Go ahead and give them a king. So Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who asked him for a king. This is what he told them about what was going to be the nature of this king that they'd be getting. In verse 11, he said, "This will be the behavior of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for his own chariot, his horsemen. Some will run before his chariots. He will appoint captains over his thousands, captains over his fifties. Set some to plow his ground, reap his harvest. Some will make his weapons of war, equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers, cooks, and bakers. And he will take the best of your fields, your vineyards, and your groves, and give them to his servants. He will take a tenth of your grain and your vintage, and give it to his officers and his servants. He will take your male servants, your female servants, your finest young men, and your donkeys, and put them to his work. He will take a tenth of your sheep, and you will be his servants." No, you'd think by the time he got through with that litany of undesirable results of their foolish actions, you'd think they'd say, "Never thought of it that way. I don't believe I want a king. I don't want to give up all that." And certainly they didn't know how well they had it, did they? They had it good. They were well fed. They were protected. You know, having a judge wasn't so bad. Back in chapter 7, in verse 10, as Samuel was offering up the burnt offering, the Philistines drew near to battle against Israel. And the Lord thundered with a loud thunder upon the Philistines that day, so confused them that they were overcome before Israel. They didn't need a king. They had Samuel there. They had God, who was able to make such a clap of thunder that it confused their enemies. They didn't need somebody to take away their vineyards. You remember how that this prophecy came true during the reign of whom? Not during the it may have come true during the United Kingdom. I guess it did, because the people began to have to pay tremendous tax and things of that kind to keep up the kingdom. But one particular incident that we know about in a later time, where a person's vineyard was taken by a king. What was his name? Naboth, okay? And so all this came true. Everything was, it'll be his vineyards, his fields, his this and his that. Everything was for the benefit of the king. And that's what you're getting yourself into by rejecting God's arrangement of judges. Everything will be, the king will be the preeminent one. And your resources will be for his benefit, for his comfort, and for his building up of his realm. "You'll cry out in those days because of your king whom you have chosen for yourselves, and the Lord will not hear you in that day." There are other times that, back in the period of the judges, in chapter 10, verses 13 and 14, I believe, the people cried out to God, and he was so tired of listening to them cry out and then reject him that he told them, Go somewhere else. Go to your gods and let them deliver you. But as always, God relented and came to their rescue. And in Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 15, he told them, "I don't want to hear you anymore. Don't come to me. You made your choice." So anyway, he says, when this time comes, you'll cry out to me, but I will not listen. Nevertheless. Didn't make any difference. Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and indeed they were disobeying, refusing to listen to the voice of God. And they said, "No, but we will have a king over us. Our will, not thine." Is that the way they said it? "We will have a king." Not "we shall have a king." It's going to happen. It's not that. "This is what we want. We will have a king, that we may be like the nations." So we can be like everybody else. They were not like everybody else. They were that holy people, but they chose to be like others and suffer the things that other nations. That our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. How many kings go out and fight people's battles? Who fights? The privates, the corporals. the little folks. King's not is usually not in the thick of the battle. He's usually the one back there giving orders. He doesn't, in many cases, doesn't even know how to fight. He just knows how, about politics. And he has generals that and other officers that handle the leadership of the fighting forces. But that's their idea. He'll go out and fight our battles. Samuel heard all these words, all the words of the people, and he repeated them in the hearing of the Lord. The Lord said to Samuel, heed their voice, make them a king. Samuel said to the men of Israel, every man go to his city. Everybody go home. Had your convention. Come from all over the country. And you've accomplished your purpose. I've told you what's going to result from your coming together like this and demanding a king and saying, we will have a king. Regardless of what God's will was, we will have a king. So that's the way it stood from that time. Well, Wednesday night we'll be studying 1 Samuel chapters 9 and 10 to talk further about the United Kingdom. Appreciate your attention, participation.